from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Sound of the Mighty Wurlitzer Organ, recorded at the Paramount Theater on San Francisco's Market Street, which closed its doors in 1965. The latest historic San Francisco theater to face closure is The Clay in Pacific Heights. And in this hour, we'll look back at the golden era of movie theaters in San Francisco and what the future holds for the city's remaining historic single-screen theaters. Can they be saved? Forum is next, with your calls, emails, and online questions and comments. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's forum program. Are single-screen movie theaters becoming obsolete? Well, more than 10 have gone under over the past decade and a half in San Francisco, and on Sunday, Landmark Theaters are expected to close the Clay Theater in Pacific Heights. This forum hour, we talk about the past, including the golden age of Nickelodeons and movie palaces, and the present of burgeoning multiplexes and Netflix and the Internet, all making it increasingly more difficult for a viable future for the city's dwindling number of single-screen theaters. Let me tell you who is joining us for the hour here in studio. Graham Leggett, is executive director of the San Francisco Film Society. They run the San Francisco International Film Festival, and the Film Society has offered to buy or lease the Clay to keep the theater running, but talks with the landlord have stalled. We also talked to the landlord, and we'll get into that with you, Graham, but welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Catherine Petrin is also with us in studio this hour. She's an architectural historian with Architectural Resources Group and a board member of the San Francisco Neighborhood Theater Foundation and a contributor to the new book, Left in the Dark, Portraits of San Francisco Movie Theaters. And if you have any sense of nostalgia or you love to see what those theaters look like, it's a terrific book with an introduction by Rebecca Solnit. And welcome to the program, Catherine.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Alfonso Felder also, we're going to say good morning to, board member of the San Francisco Neighborhood Theater Foundation, which owns the Vogue Theater on Sacramento Street and presents the Film Night in the Park outdoor film series. He's Senior Vice President of Facilities for the San Francisco Giants, and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Glad to have you all here. And Graham Leggett, let's start off by talking about the Clay. A lot of people are upset about it, and upset because it looks like it is going dark, but where do things stand?
The talks with the landlord, who's a lovely guy, in our meetings, have broken down basically over the valuation of the property. It was bought in 2008 at the height of the market, and property values have depreciated since then, by and large. So we're looking at 2010 figures, and the landlord at the moment is looking at 2008 figures. But our operation or purchase of this theater seems like such a perfect fit. It's not an easy business to run, but we're good at this business, and we believe that we can make a go of it and then some. So we're confident that we can resume the talks and that we can reopen a revitalized Clay Theater.
And it would be great to have essentially a film center of that sort, which we don't have in San Francisco.
No, there are organizations that piecemeal fill certain vacuums, but we don't have one overarching center where people can go.
Like the Raphael in San Rafael.
Or the PFA in Berkeley, or the organizations I worked at in New York City, for example. But the Clay would give us something like that to build on, yes.
We talked to the landlord, and he declined to join us on the program this morning, but he said he negotiated in good faith with the Film Society and said that he thought he had agreement in February, but you came back with a – I don't want to get into the particulars of this. Obviously, we don't got to weigh down in this, but essentially he said that he's kind of waiting up in the air.
Yeah, we feel a little bit the same. We've made more than one offer. The landlord referred us to a real estate lawyer that he'd engaged, and then he let go that lawyer. So there were a lot of back and forths and stops and starts. But we remain optimistic and have nothing but good things to say about Mr. Jaswal. We would just like to get this done. There's no reason for this theater to be dark or to be a blight on the Fillmore Business District, which, like the Metro, has been since 2006.
What do you attribute to this loss of single-screen theaters? I mean, to some degree, one has to look at things like I mentioned, Netflix and the internet and so forth, but it's also really the multiplexes, the burgeoning multiplexes to a great degree, isn't it?
It's a variety of industrial and economic factors, yes. So delivery systems like Netflix, the VCR before that, and online now distribution, which is still a very small part of the market. And then it's the buying power, the economies of scale that the multiplexes brought to the business and what the studios wanted, how the studios wanted to control their product and their profits. I mean, Alfie and Catherine, I'm sure, can add to this. But it's it doesn't mean that there can't be exceptions to this rule. It doesn't mean that every single screen theater, in the case of the Clay, with 100 years of history, this year.
A whole century, yeah.
Needs to go under. We think we can make this a beacon of light as a community and cultural hub for the Upper Fillmore area and prove an exception to what's been a fairly tragic story of the decline of neighborhood cinemas.
Graham Leggett, again, is the executive director of the San Francisco Film Society. And Catherine Petrin is an architectural historian and board member of the San Francisco Neighborhood Theater Foundation. Well, we've got something in place now that makes it more likely that these theaters can stand, and that has made you optimistic, or more optimistic, perhaps.
Well, I am optimistic. And, you know, one thing, too, as Graham was just talking about some of the threats that are facing historic theaters today, this isn't a new story. The first multiplexes appeared in 1948. Mm-hmm. There have been and really, I think San Francisco had a high number of operating movie theaters in about 1940, with 79 active theaters. It's so, you know, this has been an ongoing situation for a long time. But I do think that I'm optimistic because I talk to a lot of people in San Francisco. People care deeply about mm-hmm. these theaters. And I think, you know, the most recent sort of outcry about the news about the Clay and the bridge closing has really demonstrated that people do care.
Isn't there something in place now where you can't essentially vacate a theater unless there's a...
Right. There's a few things that the city has done, some conditional use legislation that makes it a little bit more... The city has put into place this process, and if a theater changing the use, you have to go through another process in terms of legislation.
And there are very specific requirements that have to be met if a historic theater is going to be converted to another use.
And it's Alfonso Felder, by the way.
Oh, yes, sorry. And and in this case, in the case of the Clay, what I think the really good news is that, frankly, one of the requirements that would have to be met for it to be converted to another use won't be met because you have the Film Society here making an offer which would keep it a theater, and it's an offer that, you know, I think would be perceived to be fair by those that'll make these decisions.
So why save these?
The Board of Supervisors? Is that
the ultimately, this is an issue that would go to the Board of Supervisors through the Planning Department.
Right. Yeah. But I can hear somebody asking a question. Why save these theaters? What's the value? I mean, you've been, you know, a dedicated crusader on this score, and you've helped literally save some of them. So what counts for your passion?
Well, I mean, I think these theaters are not just incredible places to enjoy film, but they're parts of our communities that we can't replace. And they are, in most cases, at the very heart of the commercial districts that serve our neighborhoods. They have been the anchors for these commercial districts for almost 100 years in many cases. And whether it's the Castro in the Castro District, the Clay along Fillmore Street, if you look out to West Portal and the Empire Theater, these were the businesses that established these districts as focal points of communities. And they have retained that role here in San Francisco for almost 100 years. And so if you look at a mall having an anchor tenant, that's what these theaters are to these business districts. And it's important that we maintain them because they're an important piece of making the of preserving the vitality of the commercial districts. And I think that's a piece that we oftentimes forget. And it's a piece that has justified in many communities across the country public investment and community investment in these theaters. And you just look across the Bay. Bay to the East Bay, where I think, frankly, people have been much more progressive about preserving these theaters, whether it's in downtown Oakland with the Fox and the Paramount on a grand scale, but even in communities like Berkeley, where the Elmwood Theater, the community rose up, established a community benefit district to save the Elmwood Theater, and it continues to thrive as a focal point of the community there.
Well, in San Francisco, we've seen somewhat of a flight to the suburbs when this multiplex began, right up to the present, Catherine Petrin. And, you know, you get real nostalgic about these old neighborhood theaters, just looking at that book that you have a chapter in, the old Nickelodeon theaters and these families that dominated in terms of creating these theaters and the architecture and so forth. I mean, historically, it seems important to preserve them. But I suppose one could say things have just changed too much now. You know, just the whole industry has changed.
Well, you could say that. But as Alfonso was saying, there's so many, successes to look to. Not only he mentioned the East Bay, but the Alameda Theater has a beautiful Timothy Pfluger 1932 restored theater that's been successful in conjunction with a multiplex. So there are creative ways to keep, these theaters viable. And, as I said, I think there's just a lot of public support. I mean, across San Francisco, citywide, people want to talk about their experiences growing up, seeing films in certain theaters, and they're nostalgic for the ones that we've lost.
Well, I was just, in fact, I was remembering the Avenue Theater, where you could go in and there'd be the big Wurlitzer and you'd see talkie films, and I'm thinking about The Surf and Mel Novick. That was a whole era, and yet, to some extent, it seems nostalgic because the era is gone. I'm not going to wax too sentimental about this because I remember that era. And one of the problems, because I know a lot of independent theater owners who have single screen theaters, they say, I'll show a film, people won't come. They'll say, oh, we want the theater there. We support it and we're all in favor of it, but they won't come in. And then just one film like that can put me in real economic travail.
Graham, we've heard those things from Gary Meyer, who's made a heroic and wonderful
with the
Balboa. But beyond nostalgic or sentimental value, beyond commercial value, of which there's nothing nostalgic, that's just straight dollars and cents, there's also the unassailable value of seeing work that you can't see anywhere else. The multiplexes show different films from the single screen theaters or from the landmark style programming or from the style of films that we show in our festival. It's not an act of resistance exactly. I don't want to make it an ideological thing, but it is a counterbalance to the fairly cynical commodities that come out of the Hollywood system. And what we're showing is something that adds to the cultural value of the neighborhood and the city. So single-screen theaters, are typically, and the way we want to run this one, is typically able to bring whole different flavors, textures, communities, populations, generations to the cinema that a multiplex doesn't. A multiplex is sort of like getting your lunch from a vending machine. What we're doing is showing something and presenting it in a way that's a vastly different experience. And while the golden age of film going has declined, just like theater or opera or the symphony before us, it's not going to go away entirely. And we shouldn't accelerate some kind of zero endpoint for single screen theaters.
So we're trying to preserve a golden age that's become tarnished?
No, not at all, because that would play into nostalgia. What I'm saying is that it's never going to be like it was. We're not trying to recreate the past, but there's a very significant current, present-day, socially transformative value to the types of films that are shown in smaller theaters, in art house theaters, and in festivals, and that's what the clay will represent. It's a way of exploring, discovering, and transforming a society through contemporary film, and that's nothing to be sneezed at.
No, nobody's sneezing at it. In fact, I think when we hear from our listeners, they will talk not with nostalgia or commerce, but they'll talk about their love for these kind of films, if I know my audience. Alfonso, though, what do you say to – I mean, like I say, you've been on a crusade to preserve these single-screen theaters. And what do you say to those cynics, though, who say their time has passed?
Well, I think that perhaps the best way to look at it is actually to use the analogy that Graham has used relative to the opera and the symphony and these pursuits that 100 years ago, frankly, were much more mainstream pursuits. Over time, culture's taste and the patterns of our economy change the way we present things. And in this case, I think we have to recognize that there is still value in both the unique program that neighborhood theaters can present and also in the unique presentation that they present. They may not be as dominant as the multiplex presentation is, but they're still valuable. And I think what we see is an opportunity to maintain some of this unique character. And it probably will take a little more effort than perhaps it took 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I think we see the value, and we recognize that in a place like San Francisco, where we do still have great opera and we do still have a great symphony and a great ballet, we also have this opportunity to preserve this unique cinema going experience in our neighborhoods. Which
we'll talk about the Vogue. I mean, you saved it; you own it now.
Yeah. And I think what we do there is while we bring in a great slate of some of the best of what Hollywood has to offer, we also do it in an environment that I think people appreciate. They can walk to that theater, they can have dinner at the restaurant across the street, and that's an experience that you can't have, frankly, in most other cities. And there is a movement sort of across the country to try to preserve that experience. You've got Michael Moore actually in Michigan funding the transition of a number of the old small town theaters into nonprofits that he'll support because there is value in it. And I think
he can well support them.
And he can. And it's great that they have that in Michigan. And I think we're trying to build that here in San Francisco. We have it, the Vogue. I think we hope to grow what we do so that the support exists for a number of theaters across the city.
I mean, you don't want a homogenous, commercialized film culture. That doesn't do justice to anybody. You want diversity in your cultural offerings, just as you do in your populations.
Catherine Petrin, what about the architecture of all this?
We need
to preserve a lot of that too, don't we?
Yeah, we do. I mean, the thing about it is that these buildings are here; they're existing. So we're going to lose them. We're going to let them go. We've lost.
Have them boarded up. Yeah.
I just don't think that's what anybody wants to see. And so many times, people come from other cities, and people who come and move here, and they talk about the fantastic experience. Oh, I remember in my hometown we had this theater, but it's been lost. Or you have these theaters, and you make the most of them. So I think it's the architecture is important. It adds to the streetscape. It adds vitality, visual interest. The Blade sign of the new Mission Theater on Mission Street is iconic. And I think that, we have to preserve them. Why preserve anything? We have City Hall. We use it. It's fantastic. Other cities have, much lesser city halls that are sterile in some cases. So, we have these theaters, and I think that, we've demonstrated, San Franciscans have demonstrated that they want them to be retained and reused. And
are we down to four, though, basically?
No, I don't think we are down to four. We've got a little list of successful and healthy theaters. We've got the Castro, of course, which is iconic and wonderful, the Roxy, the Vogue, the Victoria. Then we have other historic theaters those are all single screen theaters, but we have other historic.
That's what I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah, theaters that are multi-screen, like the Balboa, the Empire, the Four Star, the Lumiere.
And aren't you working on a new Mission, which is? I mean, it's intact, but
it's intact. It's a 1916 Reed Brothers Auditorium that is spectacular, and it has a. It was updated by Timothy Pfluger and has a more sort of Art Deco streamline blade sign and lobby, but it's kind of a hybrid of the 1916 auditorium with the 1940 update up front. And that building we came really close to losing in 2000, 2001, 2002. City College of San Francisco had determined that would make a good site for their satellite campus, which they subsequently built. It's up and running at a half a block away on Bartlett Street, and there's a wonderful location, and I think it's been a win-win. They've got a good campus theater. The new Mission is standing intact, in good shape, in private ownership with an owner who has talked about doing an entertainment use.
But it's still in limbo. I mean, it's not
moving forward. Yeah. I think that's mostly attributable to economic factors, but It's a landmark building, and it's on the National Register, and I don't see – nobody wants to see it vacant or in limbo, and I do think that there's going to be a positive future for that theater.
And I'm inferring from what you said here, Graham Leggett, that you think we're going to make this thing with the clay work, huh?
Yeah, if I had to answer now, yeah. I mean, we're absolutely committed to operating this theater. So with that kind of determination, I think we can make it work. I think it's just a case we've yet to actually sit down face-to-face with the landlord. He's declined all our offers to do so. And really, that's what I want, to be able to have an ongoing conversation, not a sporadic email conversation, because I think we both have the same interest in mind. I know he is cognizant of what the community wants. He is a retail store owner in the Fillmore. He's part of the Merchants Association himself. So he's very sensitive to public outcry and community relations, and I think we can – I do think we can bring this to a successful conclusion.
Are you looking at other locations, or are you dependent on the clay?
We have looked at other locations, but that is the best location for us.
So you sound pretty resolved that that's what you want.
Oh, there's no question in our mind but that 100% the Clay Theater is the next best step for the Film Society. And I'd give my eye teeth to be able to resolve this, and quickly.
Are you listening in the Fillmore? Well, wherever people are listening, they have an opportunity to join in this conversation. And I want to remind you that we're talking about a larger picture here, so to speak, of what's going to happen to single screen theaters and the small neighborhood theaters. And what do you think about just the fact that they are in jeopardy? I'll give the phone number here and invite you to join us. In fact, we are welcome to do that now and are cordially invited to participate in this program with any questions or comments you might have. Our toll-free number is available to you. It's 866-733-6786. And again, feel free to join the program now. You can have your say or comment or question, and you can do it also by email. Our email address, forum@kqed.org. You can also, of course, post a question or comment online by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And Alfonso Felder, just we're going to go to break, and then we'll go to our callers and our emailers and the like and get our public involved in this. There is a sense that the small theaters again, if Gary Myers were here, I know Gary Meyer would be saying you know, I don't know day to day whether I'm going to be able to keep this thing afloat economically, because that's pretty much how he describes his travails as a theater owner. And it has been a little bit heroic of him to keep it open. But the economic side of this really is pretty challenging and daunting.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it is difficult when you're competing against a multiplex that has all of the strength that Graham alluded to in terms of bargaining power and just frankly a more efficient operation. But at the same time, I think that we can change the way we operate as neighborhood theaters to make.
Excuse me, it's
work.
A little bit like the chains versus the independent bookstores in some ways, isn't it?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, there are parallels to so many different things in society, and ultimately, I think that we can make it work. We may have to shift the way we do business to becoming nonprofit. These may have to become supported by the public in new ways.
Or making a partnership with universities like has been done in Berkeley, that sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think whatever it takes, but it probably will have to change.
Yeah, this is the absolute crucial point for us. We are a nonprofit, so it means we're not dependent solely on popcorn and ticket sales. Contributed income is something like 50% to 60% of our revenues. We can sell memberships, sponsorships, foundations, and individual donors against the programming in the clay. So our business model shows us making a profit where a commercial venture that has only earned income is failing. So we feel we're in a unique position to make a profit out of an operation which is very difficult for a for-profit like Gary. Gary is a for-profit at the Balboa.
Well, we'll find out, again, what you, our listeners, have to say on this subject. The Clay Theater in San Francisco's Pacific Heights became the latest neighborhood movie theater to announce it would go dark. We'll find out more in this hour about the fight to save the city's remaining historic single-screen theaters and looking back a little bit at the golden age of movie palaces in the Bay Area, and also hearing from you when we return. Graham Leggett with us is executive director of the San Francisco Film Society. Catherine Petrin is architectural historian and contributor to the new book Left in the Dark, Portraits of San Francisco Movie Theaters. And Alfonso Felder is a board member of the San Francisco Neighborhood Theater Foundation, which owns the Vogue. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about the attempt to preserve single screen theaters here and the run of multiplexes, which, along with so many of the new ways of getting movies, has certainly helped to make theaters go dark. We've seen a number of them just over the last decade here in San Francisco. And we're talking with Graham Leggett, who is executive director, a number of them go dark, that is, executive director of the San Francisco Film Society, and Catherine Petrin, who is a board member of the San Francisco Neighborhood Theater Foundation. Alfonso Felder also with us in studio. He serves as senior vice president of facilities for the San Francisco Giants, but is, as I've said, a crusader for San Francisco Neighborhood Theaters and with the San Francisco Neighborhood Theater Foundation. Gary Meyer has joined us here as well, and we're going to be joined by you, our callers. Gary Meyer is the owner of the Balboa Theater in San Francisco and a contributor to this book that I have mentioned a few times. And I guess I'm kind of hyping because I think it's really, if you want to go back in history and see, the illustrations are terrific. The essays are good. It's called Left in the Dark, Portraits of San Francisco Movie Theaters. And we're talking mainly about the 10s and the 20s, that golden age, aren't we, Catherine?
We are. And well, now through the 20th century, and we talk about the development of neighborhood palaces. We look at really a full range of experience through the 20th century. And the book is paired with the photographs of Rebecca McBride. She's a fine art photographer. There are 12 essays. Gary's contributed one. And it's, I think, really aims to give a very full picture from a number of different perspectives. Eddie Muller, who you probably know from the...
He's a noir man. Yes.
You're a noir man. He's contributed a chapter. So it's quite a full picture of historic theaters in San Francisco throughout the 20th century, not just teens and 20s. But we do talk about the evolution of the building type and history. It's quite a full picture. And I should say that, if you don't mind my saying, there's a website for the book. It's leftinthedark.info, not .com.
No, and I don't mind at all, by the way.
Thank you.
In fact, I'm glad you can give it an advertisement. Like I said, I like the book. Also, we're going to go to your calls, as I promised, and emails. But I wanted to get Gary Meyer on record here as talking about, you know, your ears must have been burning because we were talking about just the difficulty of running the kind of theater that you're running at the Balboa economically.
Yes. Well, as I think was discussed, multiplex theaters make it possible for first-run operations to open a movie in the big screen and then move it into ever smaller auditoriums and keep it going for a long time. That's what the distributors of the movies want to see happen. They want their film to play as long as it can. So when you have one, two, three screens in a complex, you have to choose the right movie to hope that it's going to do well, and or the right movies. And if you only have those couple of screens, you can't just keep bringing in the new films. You have to play off what your commitment is. What Graham is proposing is very exciting because it's breaking a lot of rules. And yes, there are Pacific Film Archive and the Rafael and similar situations around the country that have proven themselves. But what the Film Society has done here in San Francisco is created almost a year-round series of programming, but they have to kind of jump around to different locations to do it. And now they can have their own venue where they can really create a focus for people who love movies, who want to take a lot of chances with movies. So what I face running the Balboa is totally different than what they could face and what they could create. And so it's very exciting. I have a lot of connections with the Clay Theater, and I want to see it stay alive.
What about the – I was just thinking about theaters, for example, in Marin County, like the – I was thinking about the Lark Theater, which has a lot of, you know, sort of film lover films. But I was also thinking about the Sequoia in Mill Valley and the Fairfax Theater, which were single-screen theaters and became multiplexes. There is a kind of movement along those lines, or maybe a little bit of a siren's call for some of these single theaters to turn themselves into multiplexes?
It's been going on since the beginning of multiplexing. We're originally big theaters that were turned into multiple screen theaters as the Empire, the Presidio, the Marina here in San Francisco are. The UA Berkeley is a
prime example. I'm saying multiplex. I should be saying multiple screens.
Multiple screens. They take a chop up an auditorium where they find storage rooms in the back and create a lot of spaces there.
And that can be done. Also, the Empress, and which is the St. Francis on Market Street, started as the Empress 1908 at John Galen Howard Building, later twinned as the St. Francis in 1968.
And it can be done in a way that architecturally actually really preserves much of the essence of these buildings. And at Landmark, you know, they – they over the years have done a great job of preserving the essence of a lot of these historic theaters. But there are other local examples, even the Grand Lake in Berkeley, when great care is taken to how these theaters are divided, you can still have incredible movie-going experiences within them. And we have some good examples of that in the Bay Area.
And we have some callers who want to join us. And let's go first to Joseph. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael. And thank you to the panel for the important work they're doing. I just want to make a comment. I think that it's absolutely imperative that we save the independent theaters, not only in San Francisco, but nationwide and worldwide. I think if we don't, we're going to really damage and lose our cinema, our history cinema. If you look at what's happening, what's being made in Hollywood, 95% of the stuff out there is junk. And if, you know, we're going to be able to continue the rich history of cinema, we need to save these theaters, because these directors, these filmmakers need a place to show these movies. They need an audience. Where are we going to – are we ever going to have our French New Wave directors or our Raging Bull Easy Rider directors? Are we ever going to have a Hal Ashby again if we keep closing these theaters? They have no place to show their films. And my last point is the government subsidizes everything else under the sun in this country. Can we work towards getting the government to subsidize these small theaters so we can keep these theaters going? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the call. Gary?
Okay, well, independent theaters, neighborhood theaters, are, I guess they can be defined as two different things or sometimes the same. I'd like to address the idea of neighborhood theaters, which is that the theaters that are out where you live, not in the center of the city. So if it's the Vogue or the Clay or the Balboa or the theaters on Chestnut Street or the Empire, those serve the people who live there so that they can walk, take public transportation. If they have to drive, they can do that, ride their bike, but have the least impact on traffic congestion and pollution and things like that. And those theaters are very important to the businesses that are around those theaters. So people need to be thinking in terms of supporting the theaters near where they live. As to what the programming is, it's going to be different in every theater depending on what the neighbors seem to want and what the theaters are able to get. I wanted to mention briefly a book, a companion book to Left in the Dark, which is Jack Tilmany's wonderful book on called The Theaters of San Francisco, which has photographs and information about every movie theater that has ever been in the city of San Francisco.
Catherine, holding it up there. You can't see that on the air, but here's the listener, Gary. He says, I, too, would love to see the old theaters survive. What formula seems to work? Old classics or first-run movies? I believe the Balboa uses a mix of both. What movies pull people in to the smaller theaters? I avoid the multiplexes because of the loud teenager factor. I don't know. Is there any formula, really? You have to go kind of case by case, don't you?
Yeah, because I've tried everything, and sometimes I have a success, and often I don't have a success with these different things. Again, what the Clay's planning to do would be a mixture, I think, of classic films, absolutely brand new films, bringing in filmmakers to be able to talk about their films, festivals. So that's the place for it. There is no true repertory house in San Francisco anymore. There was a time when the Castro played lots and lots of classics, and the audiences have shifted and can't support such a large theater doing that 365 days a year. So there's a real mixture of what they do, and it's a canny mixture that they are, they're putting together.
Alfonso Felder?
Well, one of the things, though, I think that is really important about the neighborhood theater specifically is that they need to cater to the interests of those communities. And so one thing that is certain is that to the degree to which we maintain them, they will be showing movies that are relevant to the population around them. And that isn't necessarily the case all the time with the multiplexes, which are booked, maybe in Kansas City. And so if we can hold on to these neighborhood theaters, I think we also are more likely to hold on to the diversity of programming that a city like San Francisco really wants to see.
You mean there's a definite kind of audience flavor of what they want in the Marina as opposed to what they want on Sacramento Street?
Well, think of the difference between the Roxy programming and the Vogue programming, for example. Yeah. I mean, yes, clearly you're playing to your audience.
To the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And
you're
I'm very careful about what I will put into the Balboa. I'm not always right in my choices, but I wouldn't play the Expendables, you know, the action movie from last week. But I did play Inception and had a fair success with it. And to Alfie's point, the three chains that dominate the Bay Area in San Francisco are booked out of Kansas City, Texas, and Los Angeles.
So they really have our interests at heart. Yeah. Let me go to more of your calls here. Here's Kate from Dublin. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have just kind of an observation. I moved to the Bay Area after living in Portland, Oregon for several years, and neighborhood theaters are extremely popular there. And just as kind of an observation, they have managed to maintain the old feel of the single screen theater, the neighborhood theater, with the architecture and just the beauty of the theater. But they've kind of brought it into today by having alcohol that they serve, and you can take it into the theater, food that you can take into the theater. Instead of having rows of seats, they have couches and chairs, and you know, it kind of is a maybe a little less, or a little more casual, I should say.
There's a sauna and massage, too?
Yeah.
With the Parkway and the Cerrito.
They were very popular there, and I'm just wondering, is there any kind of thought of doing something like that here to draw the audiences?
We're somewhat classical in our approach. I'm not really a fan of alcohol in theaters, or food, for that matter. And I don't think we would go to couches. Those are minimal penetration trends, let's say. Relatively few places do it. You see it in smaller markets like Austin with the Alamo Draft House and some of the ones in Portland and other ones. The Red Vic for a while had couches in San Francisco. But really, we were interested in a more optimum screening experience that tends more along classical lines. Doesn't mean it won't be inviting. Doesn't mean it won't be entertaining, comfortable, but
who wants a bunch of couch potatoes? You get that, you know, in the television sets at home.
But the concept has been popular in other places, and I do think that there is a void in the market here to some degree in San Francisco. That approach is being taken at a few theaters in the Bay Area. The Cerrito Theater in El Cerrito has recently reopened, and they have food, beer, and wine. And the Shattuck, actually, which is a landmark cinema in Berkeley now, has changed the way they do business to include some of those things. So I do think we'll see it, and in areas where individual operators believe that could add to the business, I think we'll see more of it.
Cerrito is one of those Parkway theaters, and Hugh is with us from Oakland talking about Parkway Theater. Hi, Hugh.
Yes, hi. First, a quick correction. The Grand Lake Theater is in Oakland, not Berkeley. Yes, about the Parkway Theater, and it was one of the originators in the Bay Area, went dark about a year and a half ago. It had a very wide audience, both income and geographically, in the hundreds. And when it shut down about a year and a half ago, a support group on a Facebook page had an audience in the thousands. And yet they still weren't able to convince the absentee landlord in San Francisco to reduce the rent, which was set at an unrealistic amount. Apparently, one doesn't have to be a chain to operate that way. And I just wanted to find out where there is a proven business model. Is there a way to work a support structure for theaters beyond the city council people who are all also tapped here to support these type of wonderful neighborhood operations like the Parkway Theater?
Yeah, Graham Leggett.
We've been in touch with a whole cadre of community groups, from the Pacific Heights Residents Association to the Neighborhood Merchants Association to the supervisor's office and candidates for District 2 supervisor, to the mayor's office, to the Victorian Alliance, which looks at preservation all over the city, to Alfie and Catherine's group, the Neighborhood Theater Foundation, to our allies in the field like Gary, and to many, many concerned citizens in the hundreds who've come to us by phone, email, and in person, in public, over the last week. So we've and everybody to a person is in favor of keeping the theater as it is under our stewardship. So
you want to get even more support? Why don't you give out your website or how
certainly
people can contact you?
You can send your interest in support to Rebecca Sills at the Film Society, RSILLS@SFFS.org, the acronym for San Francisco Film Society. A bit of a mouthful. You can also contact her directly at 415-561-5033. And if you look on our website, sffs.org, tomorrow, we will have a page up outlining our position and giving some action items for concerned citizens.
And let me thank the caller. And we were talking about what makes San Francisco single-screen theaters distinctive as opposed to the places like Portland. with couches. Here's Cheryl, who writes, "My husband and I went to the Bridge Theater one night to see the movie Waitress. Before the show began, a fellow came out on stage. He had a quiz for us, and the winner of the quiz would get a prize, a brand new pie pan. It was so charming. I resolved to go to the Bridge as often as possible. We choose neighborhood movie theaters over multiplex whenever possible." That's a sentiment, I think, of a lot of people out there. And here's Francis from up in Sonoma, who writes, "I have had the pleasure of living in three small communities in Sonoma County, the city of Sonoma, Healdsburg, and Antioch, now the Russian River area. Each of these towns have old theaters with their unique architecture and the pleasure of seeing a film without the sound of the other many screens bleeding through. Often, the screens are larger than in the multiplex theaters, and the community attendance is also irreplaceable. The single theater experience is an evening out. Otherwise, we can now just wait for the Netflix rental if the movie is all we are seeking. Often, these theaters provide a place for live performances as well. I hope your guests are successful." And Arthur writes, "I'd like to know how we can allow one person to stand in the way of a community retaining such a valuable resource as its neighborhood theater. When so much support has emerged, and when there is an offer from the SFFS, which has the resources and desire to run it. Does the building owner hold all the cards in this game if he alone decides it must close? How likely is it that it will be saved? Please ask Graham Leggett and Alfonso Felder to tell listeners what we can do to save the Clay Theater."
Well, I think Graham has mentioned one thing, which is to contact the property owner directly, and you can get the information about how to do that at the Film Society's website. But I also think that, you know, just getting behind efforts in your own community and throughout San Francisco, making sure that you let your neighbors know that these theaters exist. I think one of the biggest challenges we have is that people – San Francisco is in large part a transient community. People come from other places, and they've come from places where the multiplexes are so dominant that they forget that this experience even exists. And so – reminding your neighbors to go to these theaters, letting them know.
You're talking about educating some neighbors. Really.
Absolutely. Because
we have people who live a few blocks away from us and think we're closed.
They don't know.
It's been open since 1926, never stopped.
And that's why the Film Society's plans, in my mind, really are so important, because they will bring so many people to this great old theater that has such an incredible feeling once you get inside. And if people can get that experience, I think they will then seek it out more often themselves moving forward. And so that's why I'm so excited about what the Film Society is hoping to do, because if they are successful, and I think they will be, they're gonna introduce so many people to an experience that many of them, frankly, have never had.
And then we go to more of your calls. Casey joining us from Tiburon. Hi.
Hi. Oh, I finally got through. It's great. I'm actually in the home theater business, and a lot of people, they have like a 50-inch screen, and I really tell them that's really not a home theater until you get a giant screen. And so having a theater is especially a classic theater, is just so important, because then you get the hit of the movie, the depth of it, and stuff where you can't get it at home. And, you know, with all this money being so hard to get for these cinemas, I really think there should be like a hybrid. You might even have to get the studios back involved and have sponsored, you know, nice old theaters by a studio, you know, where they used to own them in the old days. You know, I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, Graham Leggett, some thoughts about that? Have you gone to the studios?
It's a little bit complicated because in the old days, the studios owned their theaters, so they had a captive audience, a captive venue for their product. We can't afford to be captured by one studio, and there are questions of independent curation in that model also. But it doesn't mean that the studios can't give us product at no cost or for benefits or things like that. We've done that with numerous studios and boutique distributors. So we have a good relationship with them. But the model that you very quickly outlined schematically is not a viable model for us.
And studios owned chains. Then there was they became illegal because they were controlling the product. Then about 20 years ago, they were able to buy theaters again. They did, and they all decided it was a business they didn't want to be in. So they have sold them all off. It's dangerous to have them control it. There's something that I don't think has been brought up, and that is with digital cinema, which we're seeing all the big commercial people have, there's also an incredible opportunity for those of us running independent theaters, and particularly something like the proposal for the Clay, where all these new filmmakers are making movies in a digital format. So not necessarily the big DCP, the $150,000 projectors, but they need an outlet as well. And so here's an opportunity for new young filmmakers to have their films seen and for us in San Francisco to be able to enjoy them.
Yeah, more films come into us for the international on tape than do on film now. And there's the simultaneous additional factor, which complements what you're saying, of more and more DIY filmmaking, as filmmakers wanting to take their films on the road by themselves. This has dovetailed with the loss of some of the boutique distributors as well, and the burgeoning of service deals and individual self-distribution. So I agree with you.
We're playing this Playland Remember, the film about Playland, and you had a show about it, and that's just a self-distribution from a local guy, and we've been playing it and playing it and playing it, and it's a great opportunity.
Well, here's something you'll love, Gary. This is from Lisa. It says, I have the pleasure of living near the Balboa Theater. My partner and I love having a close place for date night, as well as the mix of art house and first-run Hollywood films offered on their screens. We save money on babysitting and avoid the cavernous and sometimes rowdy downtown multiplexes by merely walking out our front door. Thank you, Balboa Theater.
Thank you.
And here's a listener who says, I was wondering if your guest could make comments about the cost of a modern-day movie ticket. Personally, I don't go to theaters very often because I cannot stomach paying $11 to see a movie. How about a single screen showing second run or third and fourth run movies offered at a discount? Also, what about 21 and over theaters, a la the Kabuki? If you can't compete with the big movie plexes, don't. You don't box a boxer, you wrestle them.
Well, I mean, you know, Gary Meyer is a $9 ticket price at the Balboa. You know, our ticket price at the Vogue on a Friday night is $4 less than seeing the same movie at the Kabuki just a few blocks away. So I think that the neighborhood theaters really are offering a much more affordable opportunity to enjoy film. And just a quick side note, if you want to see a film for free, the Theater Foundation is also presenting an outdoor film series, and we're showing Rear Window in Union Square Saturday night.
We actually have a $6.50 admission price. The first show of the day, seniors and kids, and if you buy a discount card, $6.50.
Well, and even the big theaters have a matinee special.
I think $6.50 is the cheapest that anybody has in town. The problem with the third and fourth run is that they're on DVD by the time that comes around, because the chains hold on to those things, and again, in the multiplexes, as long as they can.
Here's Spencer, who writes, I really appreciate these theaters, but the one I use the most is the Alhambra on Polk, because it has been converted into a very nice gym. For 6 years, I've gone out of my way to work out there. It draws me to Polk Street more than a film theater would. So my question is, what about new uses for these buildings, uses that might even be better anchor tenants for these streets? Also, I'd like to encourage the Film Society to consider the theater at Union and Buchanan, which is very nice and historic, but has been boarded up for several years. Well, Catherine, on the first subject about better use.
Well, better use. I'm not sure I would agree better use.
I think that's what the caller's maybe implying.
Good commercial use. Sure. We've seen lots of examples around the city where the historic building has been...
Excuse me, what I meant by better use is better than being boarded up.
Right. Understood. We've seen lots of examples where the historic theater has been retained and a new use has gone in. There's many cases. I mean, I think that a historic resource, a historic movie theater, the ideal thing would be to show films in a historic theater. But I think what the caller or the writer points out is that an architecturally interesting building, which these, you know, historic theaters typically are, they have value. And if the finances are such that they can't work as a movie theater, I think that the Alhambra is a pretty good adaptive reuse of a historic theater. It was carefully done, and it was done in a way that if it should ever return to theater use, that can happen there. Mm. So I think that the Alhambra is a great example. It's a vibrant building. It draws people, as this caller has said, and I'd rather see it be a theater, but as a gym, I think it's also successful.
The Varsity in Palo Alto is a bookstore, but that it can be returned to a theater should that ever come about.
And Graham Leggett, do you know about interest that you might have in that theater at Union and Buchanan, the caller alludes to?
The Metro Theater, where the first San Francisco International Film Festival opened in 1957. My colleagues, Alfie and Catherine, know more about the background on it. I defer to them.
I think the caller was wondering if you were interested in that as a possibility other than the clay.
The background, we were interested in it. So were other people. Yeah. The background will show why it's not viable.
Yeah, in that case, the property owner, frankly, was pretty determined for it to be something else. Unfortunately, you know, the compromise that's been reached on that property doesn't involve it being a theater to a large degree anymore. The plan is currently for it to be converted to another use while retaining many of the historic elements within the building and retaining a small public assembly space where films and other live performance could happen. But most of the building will actually, if the plan moves forward, be a gym.
Wasn't there also an understanding, Graham Leggett, that the clay would be sort of revamped into a much, even possibly have a restaurant or something along those lines?
Under our auspices?
Yes.
We would like the clay real estate package is the theater and the clothing store to the north of it on the corner, a retail store called Blue that the landlord owns. If we acquired the full packet, which is our ideal situation, we would convert that clothing store ideally into a concession area, a lounge, a reception space. So that's what we would hope to make a full-scale film center. The clay has many structural issues. There's not been very much maintenance done on it in recent years.
The owner said that he has offered to do maintenance or has done maintenance.
Oh, that's odd that we didn't hear that from him. But we're happy to discuss that in more detail with him. But, you know, it needs a new HVAC system. There's legal compliance issues that are not being met around ADA and other things. So there needs a lot of tenant improvements, which we are committed to doing.
That was in his deal, I guess, with the Landmark in terms of maintenance, I should mention. But he did say that to us when we had an opportunity to interview him. And again, declined to be here this morning. Big Steve writes, great show. You must mention the Stanford Theater in Palo Alto with its rep programming. Mm. We did. We love going there and often we'll drive down the peninsula for an errand, dinner, and movie. Would it work in San Francisco? There's a film festival practically every week there.
What needs to be remembered is that is a project of one very enlightened patron, David Packard. So if we had David's resources, we could do umpteen theaters
well,
like that.
Just think of what any of us could do with David's resources. We have come to the end of this program. Again, Graham, could you tell people who are interested how they can become involved?
Yes. Please email Rebecca Sills at rsills@sffs.org and visit our website, sffs.org, beginning tomorrow for our position and action items on saving the Clay Theater.
And here again, in the interest of nostalgia, is that Wurlitzer music, which we're going to go out to. Thanks for Richard Links, and thanks to Graham Leggett, Catherine Patron, Alfonso Felder, and Gary Meyer. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.